The cyber landscape is constantly evolving, creating new challenges and opportunities to defend against sophisticated attacks. At Northrop Grumman, we provide a wide range of capabilities to stay ahead of these threats. To learn more, visit northropgrumman.com/cyber.
Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Joining us today is Representative Jim Langevin, the Rhode Island Democrat, who is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee's Intelligence Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee. Before we get started, our daily podcast is sponsored by Bell. Leonardo DRS sponsors our global coverage. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our coverage of naval warfare. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. And General Motors Defense sponsors our technology coverage. Sir, thanks so very much for making time for us.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
An absolute pleasure. It's obviously been a breakneck period of activity regarding Washington's drive to step up its game vis-a-vis China, certainly on the part of the administration, but also up on Capitol Hill, where discord, unfortunately, has been ruling. The administration rolled out its new cyber executive order. The president has added Chinese firms to the list of bad actors and is looking for better ways to address Chinese technology companies like TikTok, as well as WeChat. We've had a potentially landmark piece of legislation moving through the Senate, the $250 billion science and technology competitiveness package. And just today, DOD released its China task force findings that the president launched a four-month effort, better focus all government departments and particularly the Pentagon on the China challenge. From your standpoint as the chairman of the Emerging Threats Subcommittee, who's been tracking a lot of these issues for some time, is this administration on the right track? What do you like? What not? What needs to happen next?
I do think the administration is on the right track on a number of fronts. First of all, taking very strong and positive steps on cybersecurity, also confronting our technology challenges coming from our adversaries. And I hope we're going to be doing even more with the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, it's the revised Endless Frontiers Act that passed the Senate yesterday. So I think that we're making progress, but you know, we can't let up on the foot off the gas. We have to make sure that we stay focused and achieving steady momentum, confront our adversaries, and strengthen our resilience and our programs here at home.
From a mechanical perspective, how do you expect the House to act differently than what the Senate did? As you said, Endless Frontier has been an idea that's been out there. Obviously, the origins going back, I think, to Vannevar Bush and Van Ever Bush, excuse me. What's your sense on how it's going to play out on the House side?
Are you referring to the bill that the Senate passed yesterday?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So I expect that we'll take it up, hopefully in short order. I don't know if we're going to meet in a conference committee, work out the details, or we're going to take the Senate bill up and amend it slightly for there, or just pass it as I haven't talked about leadership yet. I'm going to be taking a look at the bill, but you know, I hope that I'm hoping there's a lot in there that we're going to like, and really we're hoping there's not a lot of delta between the House and the Senate on this issue.
Despite the new focus, right? I mean, the China threat is not new. Folks have been warning about it for the last two decades, in fact. But several leading voices are saying that we have a very small window of getting it right. We heard from the former Pacific commander, Phil Davidson, who said 6 years to deter Beijing, to build the kind of capabilities necessary to deter China from potentially miscalculating over Taiwan. Jim McConville, the chief of staff of the United States Army, has suggested that the window may be as small as 2 years for us to get our act straight. From your standpoint, tracking these as you do, how big do you think our window is to get this right and deter conflict ultimately?
Yeah, I find it a big challenge going forward. And I don't know whether our window is 2 years or 6 years, but you know, clearly China is on the rise and on the move and designing a military and creating capabilities to basically confront or defeat us in the Asia Pacific. I don't know what China's long-term plans are. We can speculate, aggressive moves and they're demonstrating strong hegemonic behavior in the region. You know, how far out you know, that hegemony, goes and how far they want to spread the influence. They're in a lot of places right now, both where we are and where we're not. If it comes to conflict, they are an emerging power, an emerging threat to our interests. And it does concern me that they have invested heavily in technologies that can upend or undermine our qualitative and quantitative military advantage. And we're right to keep our eye on them and look at ways that we can reverse the course so that we emerge stronger. But right now, we have a lot of work to do to get to that point.
What do you find most worrisome about what the Chinese are doing, and where do you think we can most effectively leverage our capabilities to counter them?
Well, remember, the big challenge in confronting China in the Asia Pacific is that we're going to be playing the away game, and they're going to be playing the home game, and it's going to be incredibly important that we not allow them to interfere with our most exquisite assets. They've invested heavily in things like electronic warfare, whether it's interfering with or blocking our satellites, whether it's our most exquisite technologies or standoff technologies that could hold the fleet at risk or keep us pushed away from the area that prevent us from getting to where we need to go. These are the challenges we confront. But technology is big, is the big frontier that the big unknown. Again, we've invested heavily in exquisite technologies, cyber obviously being chief among them. We depend on the internet. We depend on computer systems and networks, and they do as well. But they've invested certainly in heavy capabilities that try to offset any advantage we might have. I'm also and they are also interested in the gray zone conflict, and that's that's cyber electronic warfare below the threshold of armed conflict, and we need to be able to confront them and defeat them even in the gray zone.
Do you think that, you use the word defeat? Obviously, there's a debate. The chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Anna Smith, has been talking about, hey, let's not talk about the word defeat. Let's talk more about the word deter. And there are other strategists who look at any American strategy that talks about defeating China as Pollyanna. Do you think that we need to be thinking defeat, or do you think we need to be thinking deter?
Yeah, I think that's a smart way to look at it. If we can deter China so that the conflict never breaks out in the first place, that should be our first goal, not necessarily just focusing on trying to defeat China, but trying to deter them in the beginning. You can remember years ago when it looked like China was going to try to invade Taiwan, and this is under the Clinton administration, and China was looking down the throat of two aircraft carrier battle groups, and it was clear that had China crossed that line and we engaged in a military conflict, that they would have suffered an embarrassing defeat. They are bound determined to never be in that position again. But it just showed that, we had overwhelming firepower and capability that we brought to the table that deterred them at that time. We need to make sure that we can deter them in the future.
Let me take you to the cyber realm. You mentioned it early on in this conversation. I should note for our audience that you are an august member of the Cyberspace Solarium Commission, chaired by your friends Angus King, as well as Mike Gallagher. And obviously, the team has been extended. We've been honored to have them on the program, as well as Mark Montgomery, the ABLE executive director of the panel. The recent hacks, right? I mean, everybody has been talking about the vulnerabilities that the U.S. government and industry have had for many decades. We've had a lot of high-profile hacks that have attracted people's attention, but there are those who say that actually there's an enormous amount that we're either not detecting or still remaining enormously vulnerable. The president has issued his cyber executive order. Is he on the right track? And from your standpoint, what else do we need to do? And how much more quickly do we need to do it? Because it seems like this is becoming like wallpaper right? I mean, the shock value is sort of wearing off. And while you and I would like to hope that Americans who had to wait on gas lines will sort of do a better job with their own cyber hygiene, it's not abundantly clear that that will happen.
Well, you know, certainly cybersecurity is the national security challenge of the 21st century. It is both here now, will be with us in the future as well. It's the battlefield of the future, if you will, that's here also today. You know, it's unlike all other domains, right? Because it involves private sector being on the front lines. That's where the major damage can be done to private sector critical infrastructure. It's owned and operated by the private sector. Government doesn't have any, per se, control over it as much as, you know, people might think we do. We don't. And so it's really the perfect tool for gray zone conflict. So on, you know, on the Biden administration and the executive order, I'm very pleased with the direction that they're heading. It, you know, first of all, you know, let's start with the fact they created a deputy national security advisor for cybersecurity. The president also just appointed nominated the first ever Senate confirmed national cyber director, is a position I've been trying to create for more than a decade. Right. It was one of the recommendations of the Solarium Commission. And finally, we got it enacted, got it through the Congress enacted into law. No small task, but great effort on behalf of my colleagues, including Senator King and Congressman Gallagher. And again, two great co-chairs of our Solarium Commission, which I'm proud to serve as a commissioner. And other things that the administration is doing. The executive order is a great start, right? It's but it's only for federal IT. But I do applaud them for it. But you know, it certainly implements numerous provisions from the Solarium Commission. For example, the CISA threat hunting on other government networks. CISA didn't have that authority beforehand until we changed the law to give them that authority. It's now, of course, in the executive order as well. Provides, you know, now playbooks also at the Joint Cyber Planning Office that's going to make sure that that's used robustly. That's something else that we were able to get enacted to law through the NDAA and it's supported in the EO. The software assurance is particularly important, especially the software bill of materials. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in there, you know, we need oversight from the National Cyber Director and funding to get them all done. So moving in the right direction, but a lot of ground to cover.
Are you satisfied, sir, with the cyber elements of the administration's 2022 budget request?
So would like to see more funding requested. I know they requested, I think it's $10 million for the National Cyber Director. You know, that position needs to be more robustly funded. I'm pleased that, you know, there's more funding in there. We want to get, obviously I've been pushing for funding for the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. I'm requesting the appropriators give another $400 million to CISA so they can strengthen their capabilities, both with more personnel and the technology also that they need. So we're going to wait to see how it all turns out, but we're, you know, it's a good start with the budget request and the administration that what they're supporting.
There is a robust debate on how we improve our security. Just on our program, we've heard from Admiral Mike Rogers, from Jim Lewis, Dimitri Alperovich, John Cofrancesco, JC Vega, you name it. Mark Montgomery has been part of that discussion, as well as Chris Inglis. And Mike Rogers has made clear that he thinks the solution goes well beyond a stronger CISA. And there is a tendency of sort of looking at us, right, because we want to try to do this from as civil a perspective as we can. But as you said, this is conjoined where a seemingly innocuous civilian breach can actually have some dire national security consequences. From your standpoint, are we thinking this through in the right way architecturally to get to that better security future?
So one of the things we need to continue to recognize is that much of the damage that can be done through a cyber attack would be in private sector critical infrastructure, owned and operated by the private sector, not controlled by the government, and not, you know, you don't have U.S. Cyber Command or NSA sitting on those networks, and the American people very likely wouldn't stand for support that type of intrusion per se in the dot-com world. But what we can do is see closer collaboration. One of the things I'm hoping to do and see enacted, we almost did it this in the last session of Congress, but create what I call the Joint Cyber Planning Office. And that would allow for and call for a new social contract between private sector critical infrastructure and the government, and ensure that there is more robust intelligence sharing going back and forth. Also, though, we require more, as we're going to be giving more to private sector, it would also require more, ask more private sector, real-time incident reporting and more, more accurate and timely flow of information. So, intelligence support is really critically important. So we need a stronger whole of government approach to this. And you just think about, seizing the ransomware payment early this week. FBI does it, but they did it with IC support. So, the IC doesn't and shouldn't per se be in the lead, but they got to be a part of the equation. Revisiting things like the cyber threat integration center and support from the DNI is also critical.
In the wake, I mean, not to give fits to anybody who was in the IC, and I know that you have a key intelligence responsibility as well, sir. The unfortunate thing is that anytime the IC gets involved or the National Security Agency, even though that these are well within their purview and that there is sufficient oversight over it, unfortunately, the way folks respond to it is, a little bit of a tinfoil hat. Oh, my God, they're collecting on us. I mean, that's not the case. Is there a different kind of conversation that, whether it's lawmakers or the administration, does there need to be a better campaign to talk to people about the roles and responsibilities of all the key actors and stakeholders in this? And that in many cases, right, the National Security Agency, as well as U.S. Cyber Command, that there is a both defensive, offensive, and if you're going to get this in an integrated fashion, it may look a little bit different than we're envisioning now, right? There may be a bigger role for government to play, for example, in an oversight capacity that goes beyond agreements between the public and private sector.
Yeah. And so there needs to be this ongoing dialogue, reassurance, got to be checks and balances, right? A lot of it comes down to what you're collecting about. And, We have to make sure that we're collecting the right thing. We anonymize information that is a collaboration between government and private sector, and not just a one-way street about what government demands from private sector. But you have to ask things like, does the IC understand what's actionable to a critical infrastructure entity? Do they know that the mortgage company being targeted by Russia is actually critical? Some people, and this is, I use this example all the time, where so private sector critical infrastructure, the IC may see something like the Russians poking around at a critical node, or what we it's just a mortgage processing center. Okay. This is just, again, I'm using this as a hypothetical example.
Sure.
Not happening, so, but, they might just pass it off like, well, nothing much to see there. But somebody in the banking business, in the mortgage business, would understand that if that node went down, that all mortgage processing would grind to a halt. That would affect every financial institution, every lender in the country. And so those are the types of things where you can put context to information sharing if you're collaborating in real time.
We have a tendency, and I completely understand what you're saying there, right? In terms of the nuances of trying to do this, but if you look at it, we really lack a cyber strategy, an IT strategy, a defense strategy, and we don't even have a data strategy, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's one thing to talk about cyber and IT, but effectively, what this is about is data that is being exfiltrated on, sort of a such a massive quantities of it that even the forensics of it are difficult, right? I mean, so when we intercept stuff, the number of people we have who can do the after action on it are very, very limited. What's the broader data strategy you think we need that maybe underlies all of this?
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it's about data, right? But other times it's not about data. You look at what, you know, happened with Colonial. That certainly was not a data problem, right? That was a ransomware attack. And somehow the bad actors got in. Now, I would say this, to your point on data, when in cases where it is data, then data exfiltration, you know, this is an area where we can do more to build in resilience, right? That's one of the pillars of the Cyberspace Solarium Commission, shape behavior, build resilience, and certainly impose costs. So we're among the things that we want to achieve. One of the things where you can improve resilience is that you assume that the bad guys are going to get in, and what we need to do is make sure that key data is encrypted. So I'm very outraged still about the OPM hack that occurred, and likely China went in and scooped just vast amounts of very critically important sensitive intelligence of people seeking security clearances and all their backgrounds. And you think of, all this era of big data, machine learning, data analytics, and that treasure trove of information that China now has in its hands, and how that can hold us at risk going forward. Or the people that our people are talking to, say, even in China, lives have likely been lost because of this. It could have been very, could be an ongoing challenge and intelligence issue for us. But had that data been encrypted, it would have been useless to the Chinese, but it wasn't. And so that's one of those things that it's a missed opportunity to better build better resilience in. And I can go into a whole bunch of other things, but the Biden administration, the EO requires encryption on federal networks, for instance. So, overdue, but definitely only possible if we invest in modernizing, of course, legacy IT, which is another thing we need to do.
Right. I mean, there is a lot of talk about negotiating global standards on this, reducing the Wild West component of it. Dmitry Alperovich last week suggested that, better constraints on digital currencies, right? Because right now, anybody can use a digital currency relatively fingerprintless. Do you have any hope that those steps will be effective in sort of curbing and trying to contain this from a nation state standpoint? Because it doesn't appear that Russia and China are getting the message from anything that we're doing to deter them from just about anything that they'd like to do at this point.
So to start with, we need a strategy, right? And the people to do it. We need to hold the bad actors accountable. We need to hold the nation states accountable that are facilitating the bad actors, like the dark side group that presumably is operating with impunity out of Russia. So we need to hold the entities accountable, but also the nation states that apparently are looking the other way in a lot of ways. But in terms of leaning on the national stage, and that's one of the things that the Cyberspace Solarium Commission called for, is shaping behavior, right? So we work with our partners and allies so that we create norms in cyberspace, and we punish those who operate outside of those norms. So the first thing we need to do to achieve that is we need to pass the Cyber Diplomacy Act. That would create a ambassador rank position for cybersecurity at the State Department. So that person would be the voice and the face of the United States on the international stage, working with our partners and allies to again shape that behavior. The Trump administration eliminated that ambassador rank position. It was Chris Painter at the time, and basically created a vacuum at the international level. And our enemies and adversaries, of course, have taken advantage of that at these international policy making bodies. If our voice was not there, Russia and China were all too happy to fill that void, and they did. And they were shaping the policies that were coming out of the international front that were in their best interest, but certainly not in our best interest or that of our allies. So we need to be able to lead on the international stage. But then, for the criminals, again, we need to eliminate safe havens. And again, holding nation states accountable. They're looking the other way. Well, we need to hold them accountable. That's against international law for them to allow groups like this, to like DarkSide, to act with impunity. And holding the countries and the bad actors accountable and eliminating safe havens. So also that goes along with that is creating this Office of International Cyberspace Policy within the State Department. That's something else.
While all politics are local, national security is a collective obligation. From your standpoint, is the administration making as clear enough a case for change with lawmakers to garner their support so that by the time we get a national defense strategy and a 23 measure, there'll be greater support for change on Capitol Hill and the urgency for making it?
Yeah. So, I would say it's very early yet. The budget just came out. And, there are things that need to be made, definitely the administration is going to have to engage with members of Congress, and they're going to have to make a very strong case. I strongly hope to hear from Secretary Austin, Defense Secretary, in front of HASC later this month about the president's plans for the budget. We also, we're going to have to get smart about how we spend our precious taxpayer dollars. And we want to make sure that we're not just funding systems that are old legacy equipment that could be replaced perhaps by newer, more modern equipment that may be on orders of magnitude far more effective and perhaps even at a lower cost, especially looking at not just relying on a government only created exquisite systems, but where can we leverage the intellectual firepower of the of the private sector, and getting things that are using technologies that are commercial off the shelf. Those are the things that we can be looking at. But I understand this. There's always angst whenever you're talking about creating having major budget cuts and when it affects members' districts. But the administration is definitely going to have to work with members and make the case.
And do members feel a sense of urgency for change?
Well, we recognize that cybersecurity, for example, is a huge national security threat and challenge. And my fear is that not only did obviously Colonial get hit with a ransomware attack, but it could have been far worse. I think members have continued to wake up to the fact that we need to do more in cybersecurity. And the administration, if they engage smartly and effectively, they're going to be able to make the case for putting the right resources in the right place. The other thing I will say, we cannot miss the opportunity to remind people and companies that everybody has a role to play in cybersecurity, and that a high degree of cyber intrusions or attacks can be prevented if we practice good cyber hygiene. So, for example, applying your security patches as soon as possible, backing up your system so that if you get hit with a ransomware attack, hopefully you can reconstitute your systems without having to pay the ransom. But strong passwords, two-factor or multi-factor authentication, and strong again passwords, and making sure that you're reminding your workforce don't click on the malicious links or the unknown attachments that come from an unknown email. So those are things that we need to look at and double down on.
Sir, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Absolute pleasure. Looking forward to having you back on again soon.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Everyone is a contributor at Northrop Grumman, and every day is an opportunity to help defend our nation and our allies. Visit our careers page at ngc.com to learn about joining the Cyber and Intelligence Mission Solutions team.